Well, welcome to Hope Leads. I'm Wes Lane. A lot of people feel overwhelmed, stuck, and confused. This podcast is designed to give you hope and perspective so that you can live a powerfully relevant life. Because within the context of a loving and relentlessly purposeful God, we believe your best days are still ahead of you. To celebrate Black History Month, we're talking to four people who are making history here in this city. I'm joined today by my illustrious, inimitable,
ooh,
awesome,
very nice,
and incredible co-host, David Frank. Taylor, you're here. Taylor.
Funny.
Okay, hi, Taylor.
It's lovely to be here with you this afternoon, Wesley. And how's it going?
It's going great. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, and
sure is.
We like that.
It's a great day because we're talking about Ilinda Jackson today.
Yeah. Every day is a good day to talk about Ilinda.
Yes. So in the podcast that you guys recorded, Wes, you talked a lot about how Ilinda is generating hope for others. And boy, is she. A big part of her being able to do this is because she's had people generating hope and speaking life into her. I know mentorship has been a game changer for me. I can name off the top of my head at least five people who I fully believe the Lord has used to change the trajectory of my life. Can you think of someone who's been one of these people for you?
Well, I tell you what, the moment you talked about somebody who's done that, immediately a guy's name named Bob Potter came up.
Bob Potter. Tell us about Bob.
So I am a pretty relatively new Christian, and I'm assistant DA, I'm now, and so Bob goes to church, and Bob just kind of, he was kind of bigger in life, and so he just kind of took me on as a mentee.
Very nice.
And so I would
poor
dread.
Bob.
Yeah, well, no, poor Wes.
He's
because he was Mr. Accountability. I dreaded when Bob Potter, the pink mess, you know, back in the olden days, before you were born, they had these things, those little pink message slips. You know, they would actually leave a written piece, you know, message saying,
I have never heard of a pink message slip.
I know. This is why I'm trying to bring
you. We just send texts these days.
I'm trying to give you a little, little history lesson here. And so Bob Bob Potter called and leave his phone number. And I dreaded that because I knew we would end up going to lunch and he would be asking me stuff like, well, Wes, have you shared your faith at all?
So have you, Wes?
typically, I mean, that was terribly, I mean, it was very embarrassing. It was very intimidating, yeah. But Bob
That's
would
awesome,
always
though.
Do it. But, you know, but bless Bob, because Bob was the one that really pulled me out of my cave on that. But
absolutely.
It wasn't always fun. But I'll always be grateful.
Yes, we need those people for sure. Have you ever told Bob how much he means to you?
I have.
Good.
I have.
That's awesome. So for any of our listeners, if there are any of these people that come to mind for you, you should shoot them a text right now and tell them. I think there's so much power in sharing with people the impact that they've had on you. So one of my favorite things that she talks about is how God uses our challenges and personal history to impact the community and how these things are portals of opportunity. So Wes, what is an example of how God has used one of your challenges in an impactful way?
Well, I suspect he's done it any number of times. I mean, it's because anytime we get ourselves into trouble, we those are all portals of opportunity if you'll let them be. But boy, the
Absolutely.
Biggest one, certainly, and the most life-changing one in my life was by the time I was in my late 20s, I had just dug such a hole for myself. Major indebtedness. It was horrible. That was also the intersection of opportunity that God finally got if Dr. Phil had been in action at the time, he would have been asking me, so Wes, how's your plan working for you anyway? Mm-hmm. And I was a disaster zone. Mm-hmm. But that became an opportunity moment for me to make a wise decision, which at that instance was, I think I'm going to check out a little bit now. Mm-hmm. Since before that, I thought I was pretty much my own savior, I guess you could. So that was my own disaster. But anyway.
Well, Wes Lane, I am very excited for our listeners to hear a little bit about Ilinda's story and the ways the Lord has and continues to use her. So should we get going?
Absolutely. Well, let's go into my conversation now with Ilinda Jackson on how hope impacts generations.
I won't rest until
Well, this month is Black History Month, and I'm so pleased that every week this month I'm getting the privilege of having a conversation with someone who not only knows something about Black history and lived it, but continue making history themselves and how they're walking out a purposeful life generating hope for others. I'm always fascinated how God takes our own personal history and so often uses the adversity we've experienced to actually qualify us for a tremendous impact in the community. And I say that especially for our listening audience because many of us are experiencing great personal challenges, which we often label as disqualifying, but in the economy of God, they act as portals of opportunity. And I can say that from my own experience as well. Well, today my guest is Ilenda Jackson. And I've known Ilenda for several years now. And she, in my view, is an awe and a wonder. So she wears a number of hats. She's entrepreneur, church leader, nonprofit executive director. And if that wasn't enough, she's also the volunteer services coordinator for the Oklahoma State Department of Corrections. Ilenda, how are you doing?
Well, I am doing absolutely well. And thank you so much for having me today.
Well, thank you for joining us today. Your story is just so interesting. I've just watched you. I've attended conferences that you've put on, and yes. You are, oh my, you are. I'm trying to think what the good word is. You know, it's like you have a presence and a compelling message, and so we're just so glad that you could be with us today. So, all right, now you've heard me talk just a minute ago about how God can take the pain of our lives and often use that to develop a great sense of personal passion and purpose. And I think that's your story.
Yeah.
So just shooting it right out of the gun at the beginning, what would you say is your personal passion and purpose that drives you, Ilenda?
Well, I'm really excited about family. Family to me is a very meaningful and a wonderful institution. And I'm very excited about how to preserve family and how to move family forward in spite of many challenges that families face in the 21st century.
And so, coming by that, and we know the state of the family today is really challenged. I mean, it's challenged everywhere.
Yeah.
It's the, I mean, just from your background, I know that, I've known this for years, but it's shocking to think of Oklahoma as the number two divorce rate in the nation.
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
And that challenges families and causes all kinds of hiccups along the way. It changes many times the future and the outlook for children in those families and how they're separated from one parent are back and forth in families from father to mom, and in many cases, maybe just a single mom.
Well, and look at your work at the Department of Corrections. I mean, and just thinking about Oklahoma being the number one in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of stunning. It's one thing to talk about the nation, but another thing, number one in the world for incarcerating women. Mm-hmm. And that, what, like 60% of them all have children under the age of 18?
Absolutely. And what that means is the future of children are definitely at stake because children follow in the footsteps of their parents, admiring moms and dads and wanting to be just like them, not even realizing that the state of prison and going to prison is not an upward movement, but in actuality, something that brings children down.
Well, so as I said, you are someone who has an experience, and I know that this idea and this passion for family didn't just like, you know, somebody just tap you on the shoulder, hey, could you take this on? There was a process, and would
Absolutely.
You just share that? What happened?
Well, for me, I really had a wonderful mom, and my mom is a single parent. And actually, I'm thinking back on it. I think she may have been backslidden in church. And I don't remember going to church past adolescence and all of that. But our family became very dysfunctional over a period of time. And that dysfunction actually caused our family to have many highs and many lows. We were the family that moved a lot. We were always on the go, always moving. I can easily say that I probably went to 7 or 8 high schools.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 7 or 8 high schools as a kid, and just moving around, going from place to place. But it also caused me to have my own personal experience as a child that I would say as an adult now would have been, you know, chronic depression, anxiety, and stress that affected me during my entire childhood.
Well, I think that did you have like 9 brothers and sisters?
We have a large family. We had a large, large family. And so imagine single parent and it's 10 kids in the house and in and out and all of the things that go with that and trying to keep up with everybody and all of the things that go along. I mean, I have 3 kids and just keeping up with them is a major chore. I thought my mom is my hero. Who does that, right? So, yeah.
Well, what was it about that would drive you to have an interest in family, though?
Well, I really didn't know that I had an interest in family. I really didn't know that it was a passion. Through a course of events, I left home as soon as I was old enough to do so. I really felt like my life was upside down. We had a household that I had no idea, but because of the dysfunction, a lot of things went on in the home. And so I left home as soon as I could get out, which was I graduated early and moved to Portland, Oregon, where I did a traditional thing, which was had a teenage marriage, moved out of state and lived there for 10 years, experienced some mentorship by a lady in a church as I was much younger, just digressing for a moment, in my mm-hmm. family home. There was a friend that called my mom and said, does anybody want to go to church? And in this large family, my family began to hee-haw about that and laugh about that and say church. And, you know, just the whole idea of church was obnoxious to them.
Yeah.
And so as I listened, just being the person that I was, I went the absolute opposite of that and said, I'll go to church. And so the preacher shows up. And my family mocks him and laughs at this guy in the school bus, the church bus that comes and picks me up. But I went to church, and that was the beginning of a brand new journey for me. My life radically changed. What they had arranged was for as each child got off the bus, there was a senior person, mothers of their church, that greeted each child, hugged each child, and welcomed them. And for me, this did not happen in my home to me. Mm. By this time in my life, I was very depressed, very dark in terms of being able to respond to people well. I wasn't able to do that. And so I fought in my family. I fought my brothers and sisters aggressively. And so they didn't come near me. No, they didn't hug me and kiss me and those kinds of things. But these ladies did. This woman grabbed my hand and said, welcome, and gave me a big hug and walked me down an aisle, set me next to her and looked over at me and smiled at me and touched me. And I thought, when it was all over with, I'm going to come back to see if they'll do that again and again and again. And so this was such an amazing change for me that it radically changed my life. And by the time I moved to Portland, I have an experience with Jesus that by now an older lady just begins to mentor me in this church I attended. Mm-hmm. I decided that one thing I would keep consistent in my life was go to church and struck out walking and went to the first church I saw. This lady grabbed me up as an older woman and just picked up where the other ladies left off in Oklahoma City and radically changed my life. By the time I got back to Oklahoma, I was a different kid. I was still very young as I married as a teenager, still very, very young. However, my family saw me as a different person, and it was just amazing. By now, I had a very strong prayer life, mm-hmm. and that was probably a great part of my journey. I prayed, and when I read the scripture, I thought when it said pray in the closet, that it literally meant pray in the closet.
Go get in the closet.
So I prayed in my closet, and I would pray for hours. It was such a peaceful thing, and it was such a wonder-working thing in my life. In hindsight, I knew that I was just being stripped of all of the anger, all of the bitterness, all of the traumas that happened in my life. I knew I was, as an adult, that was a very significant time of healing that transformed my life. I still didn't have a grasp on family, even mm-hmm. though by now I'm 3 kids in and headed for divorce. By the time I'm back in Oklahoma City, that marriage had pretty much dissolved and I was a single parent. And a new journey pretty much began to evolve for me.
Well, and somehow you wind up at the Department of Corrections.
Yeah, it was the oddest thing. I had no interest in the Department of Corrections, had no interest in going there. Couldn't see myself ever going there, but I went to a small church, a small community church, in fact. And there was the lady that was over the prison ministry was having to take care of an elderly mom. And she knew that I could teach the Bible. I had taught maybe a Sunday school lesson or something. And so she was hot on my heels to get me to go in and help her during this transitional time with her home. And I kept saying, no, I don't really want to go. And in the back of my mind was like, I'm never going to go to prison. I'm never going to go there. For I'd had my oldest brother had died in prison. And so I pretty much blamed the Department of Corrections for that action mm-hmm. because I really didn't understand all of that. And so I felt like going there, it would be having to face those people or having to go there and deal with that encounter. That was very raw in my mind. This happened when I was a kid. It was very impressionable to me, very painful. So anyway, the lady just wore me down. Next thing you know, I'm going in the prison and I'm telling the Lord, what do I got to do to get out of this? This is going to be awful, you know, and I've got to be here, you know. What do I got to do? So I went in and I gave it my best because I thought, well, if I do my best and I do an excellent service for the Lord, I can move on to the next thing. Because even though I had no dreams and even though I had no aspirations, one thing I knew I didn't want to do was prison.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Even though I had nowhere else to go and nothing else to do, my greatest hope was that maybe people would invite me to their church and maybe I could be an itinerary speaker or something like that, but never in prison. Anyway, this journey picks up. It picks up momentum. It picks up speed. The lady that I went in to fill in for never returned. And I become their leader because you can't have a group without a leader in the prison so that the chaplain can contact someone if there's ever a problem or if you ever have to call in and not be there. And anyway, it picks really up. And I'm saying to the Lord, this is really a dead work. This is like the armpit of ministry. I cannot see how you would have me here. This seems cruel. On and on and on I go complaining to the Lord. He never responded. The next thing I know, this chaplain is asking me to participate in a volunteer program. That was a volunteer chaplaincy program. And even though in my heart I dreaded the thought of being in the prison one more minute than I needed to be, I found myself saying yes. So over the course of events, I become the volunteer chaplain and an assistant to the primary chaplain. And as this happens for me, I begin to continue to ask the Lord about all of this that's going on and why is it happening in my life when I don't really want to be here? There's others who would break the door down for what I'm doing. And I begin to tell him that it was a dead work because some of these women over a 6-month period, I would see them coming back and coming back. And I started
coming back into prison,
and coming back into
leaving
prison.
And then having to
having a revolving door experience and coming back to the Bible study, going through the prayer line again. And when I would meet them, they would just drop their head and just, you know, they didn't want to see me no more than I wanted to see them. They felt bad that they were back in prison. And I would inquire of why did you come back? I thought you all these things you had planned, all these things you were going to do and the job. And they would say, well, I couldn't get work. I ended up back where I started from and where I came out of. Maybe it was drug infested. Maybe it was domestic violence. Lots of problems there in the home. And without any time at all, here I am back in 6 months, 8 months, or certainly less than a year, which is really the most vulnerable time that folks have for recidivism. That first year or two. If they can make it past that, they can, you know, generally have some stability. At that time, I had no idea. I had no clue what I was into. And so I thought to myself, well, okay, I see a prayer point. I'll ask the Lord about that because I see now that we need a place for women to go. That was Sovet, a safe and a successful place where women can go and be able to nurture their families and be safe from drugs and all of those criminogenic issues that brought them, that started this journey for them. I went to my prayer closet. I had learned to pray in the closet, and I was still literally praying in the closet. Mm-hmm. I got down, and I thought, Lord, I really want to seek your heart on this because I believe this is an answer. It'll release me from prison, for sure. I'll be able to do something else, but it'll also take care of this big problem.
Let you out of prison, yeah. Uh-huh.
So anyway, I got down to pray in my normal fashion, and I began to lay this petition before the Lord. And typically, I would lay out the petition and all of this that I really wanted to talk to the Lord about. And I would just begin with worship and praising. And then as I would get to the request, then I'd make the request. And as soon as I made the request, before I could get it fully out of my mouth, the Lord said, you do it. I got up out of prayer because I said to myself, now, Linda, you know, and just talking to myself.
Yeah.
You know you can't do that. And you ought to be ashamed of yourself for choosing the best spot for yourself when you know better that you have no money, you're a woman of color, but no, you're poor. You just, there's no way. And who, if they knew your history, would trust you, would believe in you to do such an important, valuable work? And I said, now, I just rebuke that spirit of whatever I thought it was over me.
Yeah.
Of
trash, you know, talk.
Yeah, spirit trash, of trash talk. I was really going in on it too.
Yeah.
Thinking you're better, choosing the best spot, don't have. And I said, okay, God, forgive me for that. Now let me get down to business. And the Lord repeated the same thing. I knew the voice of God. I've been praying in the closet by now for over 8 years. I knew it was. And when I, and at that moment, I was so shocked to hear it. I really, you know, said, that's just coming out of your mind, you know. But really, I did know the voice of God. I've been listening to him for all my life at this point. And I said, okay, God, that makes no sense. And I would just pray over it. And then I would continue to pray. Each time I'd come in for prayer, I'd lay this request out, pray more. And all I ever heard was, you do it. You do it. You do it. And God never spoke to me about anything else as it related to prison, but you do it. Finally, 2 years later, I said to the Lord, to my shame, I said,
2 years later.
2 years later. By now, I've taken a journal. I've taken a journal in because I really felt like I was praying for someone to come.
Yeah.
And I was
somebody
write,
else.
Somebody else.
To do this.
To do this.
Not that they, you.
Not me. Not, please, you know.
Yeah.
Not me. And I really, and it was very innocent, very, yeah. I really meant it. And I felt like somebody else would do this. And who had wealth, who had means, who had connections, who would do this, who had an idea of what to do. Here I was, this child that had raised, been raised in this environment that wasn't, that really and truly was not healthy. All of the five traumas that are listed and trauma and all that happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
All of the things that go on in family that shouldn't happen happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had not, you know, I had just gotten healed just through some of those things. And then here my brother dies. And man, I'm just thinking nobody will even hear my story. I can't do it. And I said to the Lord that day, I said, I'm done. I'm done. You've been harassing me for 2 years, and this is going to be horrible. I'm going to obey you because I love you, but you're going to know that this was, I'm not the right person when it fails and when it becomes a miserable thing and it becomes a misery, then what? So up out of prayer I come, I've got a hot head about it, and I say that to the Lord, and I just put everything down and says, okay, here we go. And the first thing he says, well, tell everybody you're going to open up a house. Tell everybody you're going to do this. And I said, I'm embarrassed to tell people that. He's just, tell them. So I would just say, you know what? I'm going to open up a house pretty soon for women coming out of prison. And it would just be flat, you know? But I did
people
it.
People just looking at you.
And they're just looking at me.
You're making an announcement. Well, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about? And then they say, really? Well, what does that mean? And what does that look like? And blah, blah, blah. Because this was like in 99.
Yeah.
And this was before we had the plethora.
This is 20 years ago?
Yeah, I started this 20 years ago.
Yeah.
This was before everything that we've been through. I mean, transitional living had not even been coined yet.
Yes. Gosh, I didn't think about that.
Yeah, it hadn't even been coined.
Oh, my gosh.
It
yeah.
was not there. I was out there, and there was one transitional house that was connected to the church that I knew about, and it was an apartment complex, and I got to know that person really well. But let me tell you what, and so honoring God in that little simple obedience, I told a guy that, and he just looked at me and he goes, well, my uncle sits on the board of corrections, and I think you ought to meet him and tell him what you're doing. And I just stared at him because, I mean, to me, I was just in this this terrain, this water that I knew nothing about. And I just said, okay, and turned around and walked off. I didn't even give him a conversation. But what he did was phenomenal. He knew someone, a pastor that had a home.
Mm-hmm.
And that home, that pastor wanted to do transitional living for men and just did not have the means to do so. He took me and connected me with that guy. And within 30 days from getting up out of that prayer, I had a house.
This is awesome.
I had a house. About 3 months from there, the house was renovated and we did a grand opening. That pastor came and he said, I'm going to tear up your lease that charges you rent. And I'm going to give this to you free. You can do this as long as you want to with no rent, because you've renovated the house, you've done everything, you've made it user-friendly, you've prepared it for the women. I don't even have the heart, nor do I feel that God would have me to charge you even a rent for it. It's free. Okay. So I said, okay, God, I guess you are in this, right?
I guess he's really serious.
I guess
he's
really serious. He's going to open this house. And within 2 weeks from there, we had our first client.
No kidding.
No kidding.
How many women were ultimately able to stay in the house at one time?
Well, in this particular house, 12 women can stay the way we have it arranged.
Oh, wow.
Our favorite is to have roughly in the houses, in the total amount of houses we have, is about 15. They're manageable, mm-hmm. and everybody has unique problems.
Per home, per house?
For all of them. If we have about 15 women, because then you count children.
Okay.
And you count all of that that comes with
coming,
it.
They're coming. There. Yeah, because you're pulling the whole family out of
wherever
whatever.
They are. And okay. then sometimes when women get out of prison, get out of jail, within a week, their parents, we had one lady that dropped off 6 kids. As soon as the lady got to a safe place, within 24 hours, we had 6 kids dropped off and the mother sped off down the street. So sometimes these women have an issue with the caregiver who is tired of the child or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's the beginning. And even still, I did not understand the makings of family. But what happened to me was phenomenal, because as I served those women, I found myself, my history that I was so ashamed of, and all of the bad things that happened to me as a child, I understood it in these women. Mm-hmm. And as I served them, I was able to help them work through feelings of rejection, hopelessness, not knowing what to do with their lives or whatever, because I had been there and done that. And had.
So you were totally qualified for the job. I mean, you weren't. It wasn't a theory.
Well, I didn't know it.
Yeah.
I didn't know that I was qualified. I had no self-esteem or hope in myself.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have this idea that I could do anything but fail. Mm. Something was spoken to me when I was a kid, probably just randomly, that you're the worst of them all and of all the litter, of all the kids. And whether it was a joke or whether it was real, that stayed with me. And every time I'd have a failing, that failed marriage, you deserve this because you're the worst of all of them. And then when something else would go wrong, you're the worst.
Words matter, don't they?
Yeah, they do matter. And that carried me all the way through. So because that was my backdrop in my history, I didn't believe I was worth anything. Mm. I didn't think I could do this. But as it unfolded, it was more than a dream come true. And I didn't know that I had the capacity to love people until a demand was put on me to love. I didn't know I had the capacity to care for people that didn't care for themselves. I couldn't even, they didn't have enough in their reservoir to even say thank you, until a demand was there that I could love people deeply and care for people deeply and help them find their way, until that was pulled up out of me. I didn't know it was even there.
Did you know it doesn't take a majority to create change? All you need is 10% of the population and change happens. Hope Culture is a community building a movement to create a life of hope for every person in this community. You don't have to just talk about hope. You can wear hope, because Hope Culture's beautiful apparel line does just that. In this revolution, Hope Culture is the flag you wear. Go to Hope Culture, that's one word, hopeculture.us. For every item you take home from the Hope Culture apparel line, 50% goes back to the city. So go today and join the 10% of the people leading the charge, the 10% who speak with their lives. Hope is the culture. Go to hopeculture.us. That's hopeculture.us. Well, you're really talking about altering course for a generation, for a family. I mean, this is what, I mean, your course has been altered. I mean, and you're altering the course with others as well. And in fact, there's a great verse that I just think is you're hitting on this. It's 1 Corinthians 4:20. And this is the New Living Translation. But it says, "For the kingdom of God is not just a lot of talk; it's living by God's power. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're walking out. I mean, none of this, all of this, in my, from my vantage point, just appears to you, you're following the holy breadcrumb trail mm-hmm. obediently, even reluctantly and defiantly, but mm-hmm. you're still doing it. Mm-hmm. And well, he's unlocking all this stuff.
Well, this is the deal. Once I really stepped into that level of obedience, I was already under the pressure of transformation, but didn't have the words to frame that. Mm-hmm. I was being changed from the image of just this nature, this old nature, into the image of Christ, but I had no words to frame that. I read my Bible backwards and forwards, but I did not know. I did not understand that it was me that was on the potter's wheel. I did not know that my mind, my thoughts were being changed. And I did not know that this thing that was born in me had the capacity to help so many others. I just didn't see it. And so the power to transform was so electrifying in my life that when I just came back to Oklahoma, my family was shocked. I mean, their jaws dropped when they saw me. I wasn't with my head down. You know, I used to couldn't meet anybody's gaze. I couldn't look them in the face. I could not talk clearly to people. And when they met me and I was able to walk upright and engage them, and that, you know, the only emotion I had developed was anger. And there was no anger. There was no hostility. They were thrown aback. They were shocked. And so that power that you're talking about was actually alive. I mean, it was a live wire, but I was totally unaware of it.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand what they were talking about because, you know, my childhood memories, lots of them are blocked. I don't remember because there was just so much of that. Mm-hmm. So I knew that I fought. I knew I was aggressive. I knew that I was punching them and kicking and carrying on. But I didn't realize how horrible it must have been to have this sister that is protesting this
horrible
environment.
For them.
Yeah, horrible for them.
Yeah.
And the way that I carried on. So in the middle of all of that, I realized how much I absolutely loved the preservation of family and the power in it. Mm-hmm. And as I learned that, I was able to give away freely what had been given to me. Was to us the ability to experience the powerful change from one place to another. That was absolutely riveting. That as I watched women come and go, they would have their first reuniting moment with their mom or their dad, or who had lost hope in them, or their first opportunity to be with their children that maybe they had not seen because of incarceration and jail and all of these things, maybe for a year or two. Now they're seeing them on a regular basis. As within our program, we built in something called the mommy track. And on the mommy track.
Mommy track.
The
okay.
mommy track. That's mm-hmm. where mommy spends time with the kids and mm-hmm. does all these special things. And so all of a sudden they're seeing their kids every week and they're experiencing their kids in a safe way in parks and water parks and the zoo and things that they wish they would have done or could have done. And they build those memories. So the power of transformation is one of those things that I believe is a mystery in the kingdom of God that we don't understand when it slips in. And when it begins to happen, but we see the fruit of it, and so do others.
Well, it sounds like then for the last 20 years with the houses, is there more than one? Or
there are. There are actually six now. And in these houses, then women move from one house, from A house to B house. So we have a house that's our main house that does intake, mm-hmm. and that really acclimates them to freedom and acclimates them to touching and being. It's a very nurturing environment, very peaceful, very homey. Mm-hmm. Because remember that book I was taking notes in? One of the things that in those notes that I took, that it needed to be a real home. Yeah. That people needed to say, I'm going home. And that when they come, they have a sense of home. So in this house, all of the meals are cooked, all of that, the smell of food, the ministry of food, the whole idea of them being in a safe place, that they can actually curl up in a chair and watch TV mm-hmm. and nobody's going to shoo them off and all that. Yeah.
Well, then you're in a beautiful seat to watch what God did with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
To do with them.
Well, if God could change me, you've heard that old cliche. He could change anybody. Yeah. I mean, you got to
heal you. The rest is easy.
The rest is easy. I mean, you got to know. At that season of my life, I jumped out of a two-story building. I was suicidal. I was depressed. I was lonely. I was scared. All of those things, and I didn't understand a clue. I remember one of those times when in that childhood memory, I was walking down some stairs and I said, I'm not going to use drugs anymore. I'm not going to drink anymore. I'm not going to do any of that. Maybe I can grow up. And in a tiny, small voice in the back, maybe I could grow up and have kids. Maybe. Maybe something good will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I can grow up and have this sense of normalcy that I didn't even know was always available.
So what do you say to people that they can see the course of their lives being not going in a good direction? And what would you suggest to them if they're wanting to change their family and take a new course so that the next generation has a different experience? I mean, what would you say to them?
Well, my journey was very specific. It was very specific. First of all, I had this simple encounter at a church. It was simple. Just someone hugging me and embracing me at a church. So I'm at the hands of Jesus, the arms of Jesus. I really didn't get preached down or preached to. Mm-hmm. Even though I was there and they had a call for salvation, I don't even remember going up.
Sure.
All I wanted was this, to be tugged and to be accepted. That experience carried me to the next thing that happened. I had an older mentor, but a mentor can be someone that you just look up to. They don't necessarily have to be older. This woman I thought was maybe 30 or 40 years old. She was nearly 70.
Mm-hmm.
And she became my mom in that place. But people who can then steer you. And then when I read the scripture, I did it. I didn't know any different not to. So I went in my closet and I prayed and I read and I did those things. And the power of God's word really works. As I've given that, it's not really a formula and it doesn't necessarily happen in those stages or steps. Mm-hmm. But as I've given that to others, I've watched them embrace it and their lives change. So what you see today doesn't have to be your future. Mm-hmm. What I was raised in did not become my destiny. It did not become my purpose. Otherwise, I would have ended in prison.
Well, are you saying that you're writing a new story, or you're helping them to write a new story?
Absolutely.
And you're giving them some tools, it sounds like, just from your own experience.
Absolutely.
This is how God works.
Yeah,
I'm an eyewitness to that. I'm exhibit A.
Right. And then I have these three beautiful kids that God supernaturally helped me to shape and frame. So
I know two of them.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, you're not joking. Those are great kids.
Well, and the beauty of it all is that I just said, I'm going to take the limits off. They're, number one, are not going to be treated according to color. Mm-hmm. They're going to be treated according to you are male, you are female,
mm-hmm.
and that you can do anything you want to do. So your color isn't a barrier. Your male or female, your gender is not a barrier. And poverty is not a barrier. So I refused to take housing and Section 8, even though I was very poor. I said, no, I'm going to go to work.
Really?
Really. I'm going to figure it out. I am going to figure out how to be sustained. I went to work. I got a job because, again, my sheet is clean. I don't have any dreams, any aspirations. I just knew I needed a job for work.
Well, in fact, you went on to college.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got a master's now.
Well, at this, and that DLC job, that DLC experience turned into a job that was a degree job. So by now, yes. But at that time, no clue.
Yeah.
So I taught them that a hard day's work is worthy. If you can work with your hands, work. If you have a gift to give the world, give it. If you have something to say that's going to change someone's attitude or mood, you could do that. You could start. You can be a game changer with one person if you will speak those words. So I taught them to never put a limit there. And if you don't put a limit there, then you can become and do anything. So when my kids got just old enough where I could go to school through this job that I walked into. Then I took off and went to school, and then I just blazed a trail for them. And they have been able to follow in that trail very well.
Well, you know, so much of this is, in one way or another, it's about mentors. I mean, whether it's mentors that have come into your life and your parenting, being that parent mentor to your own children, but you're doing the same thing. You're mentoring these other women. I mean, how many women, by the way, have you think?
Well, we've probably done at least over the course of time, probably 1,500 women easily.
1,500 women.
Yeah, that and their families that come through, because it takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
We encourage them to stay minimally 6 months, but they can stay a year.
Yeah.
And then they can sign on to stay longer, because some women want to stay in a safe environment. Others may choose to find a place, find housing or whatever, but we try to give them a great start. We try to help them get everything they need to move, and that they start off really with a great start. And because this has never been about transitional living, it's really been about family and the lives of those women.
Yeah, because transitional living is just like a way stop.
I mean, it's just passing through.
You're passing through. Mm-hmm. You're there for a little bit. It's kind of getting you the idea. You're no longer in prison.
Yep.
But it's still it's not a
permanent place.
Right.
And so we do everything they need so that when they do get into their own place, there's not another transition, which was the key. So it's really about families, and it's really about those children being safe. It's really about sustainability and giving them that safe and successful transition that they can live. And even if they work at McDonald's, it's successful because before they were in prison.
So what do you say to folks out there then? I mean, what you're really pointing out is, you know, the old verse, there's life and death in the power of the tongue.
Absolutely.
And how you are speaking life to your kids, you're planting dreams in them. I mean, you're just handing off what in faith what you've seen take place. I mean, and it sounds like you're doing the same thing with these ladies.
Absolutely. We have a course in the beginning that says, hey, if you could be anything in the world and money wasn't an issue, what would it be? And you know, those women have the same answer I did. They hunch their shoulders and say, I don't know.
So, all right. So, Elena, let me ask you this. So imagine, I mean, I guarantee you there's somebody listening that is wanting to know, how do I change course? And impact my family, and you've given a description of that, and so much of it, it sounds to me like you're really telling them they need to adopt a new language,
and a new mindset.
Yes,
because it came with it.
Yes.
I'm gonna be honest with you.
Yeah.
You know, I went to places where I didn't know which fork to pick up, and I had to watch what someone else was doing. Because I had to get rid of the fears and the phobias of change. Because when there's change, there's a vulnerability in that change. And so what traps us is the fear that everybody's going to know, or I can't do it, I'm going to fail anyway.
Yeah.
So when you begin to break out, I always say, go too far that you can't turn back. Tell everybody that go too far. Yeah. Whereas you've done too much now,
burn your
and
bridge.
Yeah, jump over the cliff, because this is the deal. We can't go back, so we want to burn all those old bridges that you can't run back to that old safety place. But you have to find a new one, and so you can't let your past define you. You can't do that. What you have to do is begin to find you a new normal moving forward and find people that talk your language, that are willing to invest in you. Find people.
Where do you find them?
Well, guess what? I bumped into mine just ironically, because I was determined that I would at least go to church.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people everywhere. I'm one of those people that know the language of hope and know and understand the language of future and understand the language of dreams and visions. And so I can see a person and see who they are, tell them who they are and where they should be. That's real important. I can see that potential. And even when they're going, me? I'm going, you. You're God's best. And his plan for you is the best. And you're not going to, just because you've had all these broken issues, we're not staying there. God's plan for you is perfect. And everything, guess what, about you is perfect. You were made on purpose. And let's get busy with what we got to do. And they're just looking at me. And I say this to them. If you don't have the faith, hang on to my faith and let's go for a ride until your faith is strong enough to stand. I can carry you for a season.
Well, you think about so many families, I mean, they're in this and even in this city, that are just in a place of desperation. And you've just been such a great example of someone just obediently just taking the next right step and just press into that,
Sometimes it doesn't feel right. I mean, it seemed like, God, you got me on this, it isn't right. But you know what? I realized that I was forerunning. And I was forerunning for my family because our generations were going to prisons in my family.
Yeah.
All the males in every generation. Mm-hmm. And so that was scary, but I didn't understand that either. Mm-hmm. And so God redeemed all that. And so we don't have males going in our family to prison anymore. Mm-hmm. We plug that up and cut that off. So we don't have that happening anymore, which is huge because if you lose all your men to prison, then you don't have a namesake.
Oh, their whole.
You don't have a protection or safety. You have a neighborhood filled with women, and you've got to have those protectors in there. Yeah.
Well, I tell you, Linda, you are a history maker. You are a change agent. And as I sit here, I just say, oh, Lord, would you replicate her about a million times around here?
Absolutely.
I mean, you're just setting people on a different course. And that's just freedom. You're setting people free. And so I just can't thank you enough for being with us today. I really appreciate that. God bless you for your work, your heart. And oh my goodness, if you're a listener out there right now thinking about how tough it looks, golly, I don't know if I could do that. I mean, I hope you've really listened to Linda's story here about just what that looks like. And just ask yourself the question, I mean, what story are you telling with your life? What history is being written? I mean, Linda is helping women and their families obtain a new and true identity. And each of us have the capacity to help people understand who they really are. I mean, boy, I imagine, Linda, if people would just make a point of speaking life
Absolutely.
To other people, those words matter. Even if it's just in passing, your words matter. What stuck with you was the comment of that guy, well, you're the worst of the bunch. And you had to contend with that for years.
I had to contend with that.
But the
you're
same short
right.
phrase that, you know, hey, you're going to make it. It can
absolutely.
Speak life, and that could be the seed. And so we do that in greater number, then we end up with a different community.
Absolutely.
Community of hope. Well, the profundity of what God is willing to do to us and through us is mind-boggling. And here's the deal. We know it's true because there's too many eyewitnesses to their own personal transformation. You've just heard someone lay that out pretty clearly. And so if you don't know anyone like that, you're hanging out with the wrong crowd. And you need to hunt a new crowd. And here's the deal, too. Just like Linda was talking about, if you don't know where to go, just ask God to set it up. I mean, he will orchestrate all this stuff. Just ask him. And so, because he's willing to rewrite history, both personally and collectively. So step it out, take the next right step, and step by step, he will get you to a place of passion and purpose for your life, just like he's done to and through Linda Jackson. Nothing is impossible within the context of a loving and highly engaged God. Linda, thank you so much for being here today.
I'm so happy to have come. Thank you for the invite.
So let me give you some concluding thoughts. If Hope were a person in the room, what would she say to us? Well, I think first of all, she'd say that you are fearfully and wonderfully made, that an unchanging God designed, built you, and sent you into a moment of history as part of his loving strategy to transform a chaotic world and make it good again. You are called as change agents. Hope would tell you that she flourishes when we listen to God and set goals for our lives that press us further toward becoming that person God has always been willing for us to become. Hope would tell you to set action steps towards achieving those goals. They don't have to be giant steps. Start with baby steps so you can be encouraged along the way. But hope would also tell you that you've got to not just make plans to step, but you must exercise the willpower to just take that next right step. Step by step by step gets you to the destination God has for your life. It's the long obedience in the same direction. And finally, hope would tell you that God sees us not as we are, but as we could become if we will dare. It's the same for our communities. As followers of Jesus, you are a sent people, and all humans should flourish because God's kids are in town. What evil thing dies because you exist? No one else is coming. You're the generation sent to your community in this moment. You're it. Press into God's purposes for your lives, and you will discover that hope abounds and that Jesus is still the God of the impossible. Thank you for joining us today on Hope Leads. I'm Wes Lane. Once again, I'd be honored if you would take a moment to rate this podcast, review it, subscribe, and share it with someone who needs hope. We want to thank Brianna Gaither for the song I Won't Rest Until from her album Vanity. Remember, you are fearfully and wonderfully made by a God who is willing for us to live meaningful lives of profound impact. I invite you to just show up and watch God show off.